Hello, this is Mike Larson, and you're listening to Camera Dojo with David and Carrie. I think two of the most friendly, generous guys in the industry. We're about to start an amazing interview, and I'm really amped to share with you my heart and wisdom that I've gained from years of shooting and from people who have influenced me, and there's so much to share. I believe that we all have things that we don't know that we don't know, and today we'll explore these, and I hope that you'll leave stoked and blessed.
Welcome to Camera Dojo, the official podcast of CameraDojo.com, where we help you make the most out of your photography. This is going to be episode number 58, and I'm your host, Kerry Garrison, and with me, once again, Mr. David Esquire. Hey, David.
Totally, man. Totally.
You rocking the totally?
Dude, I am seriously rocking the totallys this week. I've got so much to totally talk about, and it's just going to be a totally great week. And everybody that's listening, remember that word, totally. That's all I'm going to say.
We don't have a whole lot to talk about this week, and we do have a long conversation with our special guest today. So I do want to cover a couple quick things, and I know David's got a couple things, but we're going to try not to make it too long because we do have a rather long conversation today. The first is, I put up a video called Walking Through a Typical Product Shoot. Some people have been asking me what the process is for setting up some lights and things. So I have a new video on that. The Pocket Wizard Control TL, the ATTL wireless system from Pocket Wizard, has a new firmware update, version 4.3, that addresses some performance issues, especially with the Canon 5D. Although I've heard it stops it from working on the G10. So if you're using the new Pocket Wizard Control TL system on a Canon G10, you might want to check into that before upgrading the firmware. Also, we started a new segment because a lot of people have been asking of what's in your camera bag. So I kicked it off with what's in Carrie's bag, and I show you all the stuff that's in my camera bag. And we're going to do David, and we're going to have some of the other local photographers around here, and anytime we can get together with someone, we're going to see what's in their camera bag because people have asked for it. And other people have been asking for some other video tutorials, and we have a lot more coming out. It's going to be a little slow next week because I'm going to be in New York the entire week. But David, you had a couple things to share?
Yes, I do. There's a new thing that's on Facebook right now that I think everybody should jump on to help gain more exposure for their photography business. If you go to Facebook, there is a new page where you can get a free vendor profile for wedding professionals. And this is great because it's across the board for photographers, videographers, cake decorators, the list goes on and on. You can get a free one, or they are having a promotion right now where it's, I think, $200 for the year. And it gives you a little bit more of a priority placement in terms of your listing being in the series, the endless masses of photographers that are out there. I took the leap and threw down $200 on my credit card today. We'll see. I don't know if it's going to help, but what's nice is that I actually kind of took that and took it to the next level, and I have solicited testimonials and reviews from pretty much a lot of people that I know and a lot of the clients that I've worked with that are currently on Facebook. One more way to help build your brand, build your value of who you are as a photographer and your product. So definitely take a look at it. I think it's worth it.
Well, let's revisit that in a couple of weeks and see how it's been working out for you.
Definitely. Absolutely. Totally.
We do have a great guest this week, someone that both David and I have wanted to have on the show for a while, and we finally got it nailed down. And I think you're really going to enjoy listening to him. It's Mike Larson, wedding photographer from San Luis Obispo. Very inspirational speaker, very motivational. And hopefully we're going to talk about building relationships with your clients and how to work with that to foster that into ongoing referrals. Mike talks a lot about this in different seminars and his workshops. So I think this is going to make for a really good conversation.
If it's anything like the couple of times that I've seen him speak at PartnerCon, it's going to be amazing. He just brings a lot of content and a lot of real-world application of what we need to know.
Yeah, he's been doing this a while, and he's got a lot of experience from around the world that he brings to this. And I think this is really going to be a powerful one. So let's take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be on with Mike Larson. And we are here with Mike Larson, who is one hell of a good wedding photographer who's based up in the San Luis Obispo area. I've met Mike at WPPI. He's a great guy, a wonderful photographer. But Mike, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and the type of work that you typically do?
Well, you are right. I'm a wedding photographer. I actually started out doing landscape way back in the day. Found that it didn't pay very much money, and although I loved it, it wasn't very profitable. And I ended up getting into weddings, but after shooting weddings for a while, I kind of got burned out. And because it was a job, and it wasn't something I was passionate about it, but I didn't really. You know, the older I get, the more I realize the reason why I was burned out is because I didn't view myself as an artist. I viewed myself as a commodity, and commodities get boring. And because of that, I ended up stopping doing that. I did go to school for business and photography, but I ended up actually taking all that and going and shooting surf and action photography. From there, I started shooting fashion, and I was working in Sydney, Honolulu, LA, doing a lot of traveling, and I realized how much I liked working with people, especially doing brides again. And so in 2004, I started shooting weddings. 2005 was my first full year back into the game. And just to give you numbers for reference-wise, I don't say this to brag by any means, but it's just for reference. I went from doing like pretty much nothing in 2004 to 37 weddings in 2005, 52 in 2006. And I've been tapering down a little bit more lately, just because my price bracket went up. But actually, as a studio now, we have a team of shooters, so we're back up to 75 or 80 weddings a year as a team. So that's a little bit of a background on me personally.
It's a hell of a story. I mean, I've read that before on your site, and how you've kind of taken a lot of that other experience and melded it back into the wedding photography, which is really interesting. I'm a technical guy, and so I have to take that experience and bring it into what I do. And other people have other experiences that they try and bring in, and working in fashion and glamour and all that. That's, I don't know how surfing plays in, but those other things certainly can play a real role in defining a wedding style.
They do, and I think the surfing aspect. I can just tell you, when you have to shoot slide film on the beach and you're only as good as getting it, within, maybe you have to nail it within a third of a stop. So you have to learn how to shoot right the first time. That was something that pushed me. When you deal with corporate clients, when you deal with like companies like Roxy and Billabong, you can't do things that you can get away with when you're charging $200 or $2,500 for a wedding. I mean, I'll be honest, like there's things that just ethically or just the standards in the industry, I learned it was like a crash course in, hey, you're dealing with multi-million dollar companies. You got to get it right the first time. So that really kind of grew me up fast in terms of being an entrepreneur, which was, there was this one story where I went out to Surf Expo and I really needed work bad. And I did not have every credit card was maxed out, and I had just gotten back from a trip to Australia, and because I'd bought all this gear, and then I decided, you know what, I needed to push the fashion side of things. So I bought a one-way ticket to Florida, and before that I produced, I spent like, $1,000 producing this catalog of my work that I'd done for other companies, and flew out there. I had to get a deposit for a job in order to fly back. And that was, and I did not have enough for a rental car. I remember walking with my bags like two or three miles to get to a friend's house. It was gnarly, but I learned from that. Like, it just sucks to be in that place. It sucks to live paycheck to paycheck. It really just behooved me to get my business down right And I think that was in maybe 2003 or so, 2002. And, you know, just going through those experiences, I feel like makes me really appreciate the clients that I work with. But it also makes me realize that when I apply all the things I learn from that, man, it gives me such a one up on, you know, on the rest of my the competition or the other photographers in you know, across the country.
Because wouldn't you say that one of the problems a lot of photographers face is not understanding the business side of things?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think finally, within the last literally a couple of weeks, I've been able to quantify that into a way that kind of is easier for me to think about it. And it's like this. I'm an artist first. I love surfing. I love being in the outdoors. I'm kind of, I would consider myself, you know, I'm a surfer. I love REI. I love that outdoor kind of thing. I don't like spending time in an office. And because of that, because of my drive to be an artist and to be passionate, and I love hanging out with people and talking and learning and sharing, I started to realize when I focused all of my time on doing those things, I neglected the business side. But there's this key thing. I went to Dave Ramsey's workshop. He has his Entree Leader workshop, which is he does them twice a year, and it's a hefty investment. But it's this week-long intensive, and it's insanely good. I highly recommend it as an outside of the industry workshop for photographers. But one of the things I learned at this workshop is learning, knowing what you don't know. And so he presented this thing that said, there's things you don't know that you don't know. And I think being an artist, it's easy to have a bigger category of things that you don't know. And it's one thing to say, you know what, I don't know how to do print order fulfillment 100% right. So you know what, I'm going to use Pictage because I know that they can produce consistency, and it saves me from having to interact with another, I don't know, we probably have 500 people make orders every year at least online on weddings. So I figure, you know, hey, that's another $15,000 or $20,000, $30,000, I think what it is now, that I don't have to deal with those clients. And not that I don't want to, but it's that I shouldn't have to. It's a simple process. And so that's one example of the more I understand business, the more I understand the, like Dane Sanders talks a lot about task management. I've found that I was the biggest bottleneck with things happening in my studio. And whether you want to have a studio where you're a sole proprietor and you do everything yourself, or as far as all the weddings yourself, or whether you want to have assistants or associates or grow, eventually it comes down to the point where you can't do everything on your own. And if you do, you will burn out. And I burned out. And I think that there's not one artist that likes doing all the art, all the billing, all the following up with clients, all the taxes, all of the business side of things, all of the accounting. I have never met anyone that loves doing all those things. And if you do everything with excellence, you know, I was also inspired by another quote. And I don't know who originally quoted it, but it is the quality of a man's life is directly proportional to his dedication to excellence, regardless of his profession or occupation.
Mm.
And I can
I want to write that down.
No, it's good. I'll repeat it. The quality of a man's life is directly proportional to his dedication to excellence, regardless of his profession or occupation. That's changed my life, to be honest. And I started to realize, you know what? I can't. If I don't do the business with excellence, I'm going to lose clients. We have been blessed to have our business to a point where we have 100% referral clientele, which is, I can't even tell you, it's the biggest blessing in the world. And just not worrying about, you know, clients coming in. I mean, all I can say is God's been great to us. But I mean, we have 6 weddings coming up on Saturday for everyone on our team is booked out. And in an economy that has a lot of competition and is so-called going down, to have a business that runs itself so that I can be a photographer first and an artist first means that I had to invest time in the things that I didn't know to get myself to a point where the business wasn't an anchor for me. The business side wasn't an anchor stopping me from being an excellent artist, because you can only go so long before you have to follow up on bills, on collecting balances. And you can only go so long as an artist before you have to start finding out how to depreciate your gear and how to start using the system to allow yourself more freedom to be an artist. And there's so much, there's, you know, to someone coming in, they may think, oh my gosh, there's so much to learn. Geez, you know, where do I start? But it really is simple. It's just, you know, one foot in front of the other. There's a lot of principles that are pretty simple. And we kind of created an entire manual that has every single task, everything we outsource, all the companies we work with, how our, you know, the final end of our company meets the other end of the other company, to establish something where we prioritize our time and our clients' experience over everything, so that ultimately our mission statement, which I know this has been a long ramble, but our mission statement is that we provide the highest quality products with the highest, you know, level of customer experience, and we do that with the highest quality of character. And when we manage ourselves with integrity, which means the art side and the business side, we have clients that refer us, and we have people, we don't have waste with unhappy clients or unhappy processes that cost us headaches. And it, ultimately, I think it's a business model that every single photographer should employ.
To get there and accomplish that, and to have such a high referral rate, a lot of this comes down to the relationships that you're building with the clients. You're not just, well, snap, shoot, burn, deliver, see ya.
Yeah, that's a good point. And in your experience, what percent of photographers would you say are most focused on the turn and burn, as it's so-called, or just that kind of get in, get out, do your thing?
I think people want to do more. I just think they don't really know how to do more. And from our conversations with other people and local people and people who are trying to get started, that seems to be one of the bigger obstacles, is they just really don't know what to do or to what extent to go when dealing with clients. They know instinctively that if you have a good experience with that client, the odds are you're going to get referrals from it. They just don't really know what the approach is and how to really deal with people at that level.
Well, you know, the first thing that pops in my mind is I'm fortunate enough to be in a position where I have a mentor program where I mentor photographers. And one of the photographers that we're working with right now, just a little while ago, amazing, really, really, really sweet couple. They have so much passion, so much energy. And I think that, you know, after talking with them, they spent almost 22 minimum to 30 hours a week color correcting, doing layers and filters and all this stuff on their images. And I was talking with them about it, and they, you know, said that was one of their selling points. And we started chatting and going through why and what separated them from other people. And they said they love working with people. And one of the things that I strongly believe in is, in a world where you can get a 50 megapixel camera and you can be on the best computer, and that the entry level for technology is definitely dropped, you're ultimately left with the one thing that is the greatest degree of separation, which is your character. And what I mean by that, just to develop that a bit more, is when people talk about a photographer they work with and they say, oh man, he takes great pictures. Or when you meet someone on the street and you say, what are you? I'm a photographer. A lot of people say, oh cool, my aunt's a photographer, or my mom's a photographer, or I like to take pictures too. That photographer term is almost become something like when the Brownie Revolution happened back in the day, and everyone got a camera because it was cool and it was something fun to do, which isn't a bad thing by any means. But what separates people, I believe, at least what our clients say, is they talk about the experience they had with the person and how they served them. And I think that totally comes down to the character of the photographer. And it's been interesting to travel around the world. We spent 10 days in Europe talking with photographers. And an interesting statistic that we came up with was, I asked everyone, I'm like, how many of you guys in the audience have been on the other side of a camera to feel what the experience is like and to have images that you're passionate about to show people. And less than 5% of people raise their hands. And I started thinking about this, and I'm like, you know what? How can you be passionate about an artist as an artist and have never experienced the art that you are selling? So you end up selling, like a salesman, a commodity product, and you sell it in a way that is that people have to default on price rather than selling the experience and being able to develop. And that's the selling side and the introducing, like, this is what we give to our clients. But on the flip side, if all you spend your time on, like my couple that I was mentoring, if all they spend their time on is production, they're going to be burned out. They're not even have time for the experience. So before, when you asked me that really good question about how do you, you know, the balance between, you know, the business and an artist, man, I say that business side has to be nailed down as soon as possible in the most efficient way possible. A good book to read is Timothy Ferriss's 4-Hour Workweek, which I love, and The E-Myth. To get that down so that you can do what you love so that you don't get burned out, because, I don't know, for me, getting burned out is like cancer. It's like gangrene. Once it infects one area, it's going to start chewing through your business until next thing you know, you hate photography. And meeting a client gives, you know, going early to meet a client and hang out just, you know, freaks you out or stresses you out because you have so much to do back in the studio. That's not a way to run a business, you know?
The E-Myth is a great book. I love that book.
Yeah.
And it's interesting because I can relate to a lot of what you're talking about right now, Mike. And a big eye-opening experience for me recently was when I had attended the Dane Sanders Roadshow down in San Diego, because for the past 2 years, I've been running at maximum capacity. And, you know, just recently, Carrie had referred to my calendar as, you know, needing a shoehorn, like the biggest shoehorn you can to squeeze everything into it when it was being managed correctly and effectively. So when we were talking about that, it's like, okay, well, who do we know? Well, Dane's great with task management, and you're brilliant, absolutely, with what you're talking about right now with all these incredible topics. And I'm sure that there are so many people that are out there that can relate to so much of what you're talking about. And I do think that tonight's, right now, the key phrase that's sticking out for me so far with our conversation is you don't know what you don't know. That's so powerful, because that's, I think, what you had asked Carrie about, what are some of the things that people are running into that we speak with. And I think that is a very common thread. You know, you can only know so much, and then how do you take it to the next level if you don't know where to take it?
Yeah. And, you know, one of the things that John Maxwell, who's an artist or an author that's inspired me very much, he has a lot of books called Developing the Leader Within You. Part of kind of at least my thought behind things lately is that, right along with what you said, you can't do everything with excellence, and you can't manage yourself with integrity if that's not something you're seeking after. And I think a lot of people are seeking after the last, you know, the latest camera, and it's like, you know, I tell people, like, look, you know what, I used to work up until middle of 2006. I worked on with my, I had a 1DS, the original 1DS. It shoots 3 frames per second. And it literally takes 3 seconds from the time that you shoot to the time the picture shows up on the back of the screen. And it has a 10-frame buffer. And that I would spend $8,000 in 2003 on it. And now everyone laughs at it because it's our backup camera. And it's funny that a 20D is faster than this camera, than this $8,000, you know, original Mark One. And it's funny how people spend a lot of time and energy and gear and to technology side of things and forget, like, man, there's so much more to running a successful business that enables you to enjoy it and love it, you know?
Yes, absolutely. And for me recently, task management and outsourcing, letting the professionals do what they do best, because I'm not the best editor. So fine. I'll do my little fun artistic edits and let shoot.edit handle it. And Pictage handles my print fulfillment. And I love Pictage's album design. I think they're doing a spectacular job. And I'm impressed. I mean, it's a huge burden off of my shoulders right there.
Yeah. The companies that we've, you know, been able to use that have helped us with our work have really radically changed the way I approach business. You know, Pictage, with just handing everything off and trusting that, I think that's something that taught me how to actually hire my first studio manager was the Pictage mind frame of, look, handle it off, we'll do the rest for you. That's something, and you know, getting checks for a couple grand every month is a blessing. I don't do that for the money, but getting that is like, wow, this is that a business should be profitable. You know, I tell, it's funny when we talk to the people in the workshops that we do that don't know the difference, and I didn't know the difference between what's a difference between a hobby and a business. A hobby is something that is, you know, costs you money, and a business is something that makes you money. It should be profitable. That's what business is and should be. And a lot of people have businesses that aren't profitable. And I think it's important to realize it's a serious thing. Like, I mean, a lot of people are dealing with supporting a family. A lot of people are dealing with, you know, trying to create their business to pay mortgage payments. And, you know, we talk about how to make your business more profitable, and it's not about greed. It's about, man, set up your business so that you don't get burned out. And if you're going to spend 20 grand in gear and invest 10, 15, 20 years of your life into a business, the better of a leader you are, the more you can manage yourself with integrity, the more you can get all your ducks in a row with your business, with you know, getting everything down, understanding your mastering your camera so that you don't have to jump into a technical bubble, and you can focus more on, you know, less on chimping and redoing and more on just engaging with the client, because when they leave, their whole experience is going to be, you know, on the shoot, it's going to be, how was it to work with you? They're not going to see the pictures till a week later. So they have, you know, a few photographers, I feel like, realize that how they are during that shoot is so huge. It's so key. And I love shooting with my wife. I shoot with assistants a lot too, but shooting with my wife is especially cool because we've developed a lot of signals for how to develop, you know, myself as an artist, as a artist that people can get along with and love to hang out with more. And we, you know, a lot of people have assistants. Actually, a lot of people don't shoot with assistants. And I think that aside from holding, you know, a sun bounce reflector, which is, we have assistants at every wedding that do that, or to giving you feedback on whether you were grouchy, grumpy, short, whether you disengaged, whether you built them up as a couple. I mean, there's, you know, I like to think that at least 80 to 95% of people coming to a photo shoot are nervous.
Yeah.
And so if they're coming nervous, who cares if the first 20 minutes of your shots don't come out or you don't even shoot? Like, the photographer can be the one unique person that can actually make that couple feel more confident in front of a camera for the rest of their life. And that's a pretty big role. And I think that's something that no other wedding vendor has the potential to do. And so, you know, we looked at all the areas of the client experience we could capitalize on and say, what are most people really concerned with? Because they're not concerned with, you know, how many pictures you take or what kind of gear you have, regardless of what they ask you during the client interview. They want to have a good experience. And when you can make them have the most amazing experience of their entire life, make them who were awkward feel comfortable and beautiful, build them up and make them feel like the photo shoot was just hanging out like we're doing now, just talking over, you know, whatever. When you can do that, people are going to start referring you based on your character and who you are, and not and then when they see the images later, man, it's like, hands down, you're going to be the best artist, competent artist that has managed themselves with integrity with all the business side of things. And then it's just the most amazing person to work with, and then makes them feel beautiful and makes their friends jealous over how great their images look. Because let's face it, if someone's nervous, you're not going to get good images of them, regardless of how technically perfect you are.
Where do you start building that relationship with the clients? I mean, you're talking about the day of the wedding experience, but do you really start building that in advance, working up to that?
That's a really good question. And it's actually something that I feel like we've been able to develop more and more. You know, being that we do have six photographers in our company, one of the big things that I've been really adamant about is keeping it with a boutique feel. Like, it's not a Bella Pictures. It's not, you know, Bella Pictures is great for the application that it's built for, but our heart and goal is to serve our clients. So we let all of our clients know serving our clients comes above the pictures. You know, if someone's hot and tired and is over pictures, camera goes down, and we think of ourselves as, you know, How do we find a solution for whatever's going on throughout the day? But to answer your question more directly, we actually, with our referrals, it's our hope that the relationship starts before. The relationship actually starts at the wedding that they're being referred from. And we found that when we actually focus that as our target market, not bridal magazines necessarily. Bridal magazines aren't bad in themselves. They're great to start out if you don't have anything getting into something like that. But once you start to develop your business after year two, you should look at it, the very first wedding you get, is that you could have clients there that are going to hire you two or three years down the road. To give you one example, my very first bridal show I ever did, I had a bride that was there who, and I actually just spoke with her aunt about just after I got off the phone with you, who referred me to, this is a crazy story. 2004, I did my first bridal show. Do we have time for a little story?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. She ended up being so stoked on my images. She wasn't even married yet, but she was dating someone. And she said, she wasn't even engaged yet. So she said, he's going to photograph my wedding someday. She ended up moving out of town up to Sacramento. And she became friends with some of her coworkers, showed her the work as soon as she got, you know, because she was thought she was going to be getting engaged in the next year. So, mind you, 2007 rolls around, and one of her friends was so inspired that she hires me. But my prices had doubled since 04. So my initial client, just to protect her identity, let's just call her Sarah, because she was, you know, the prices had gone up twice as much. The people that she had referred me to had told her, look, you told us about this guy and now you're not going to hire him because he's charging more. If I hired him, you're hiring him. So they ended up reconvincing her to hire me and justify the higher price. Because of that wedding, that original wedding, we ended up doing their cousin's wedding, Sarah's cousin's wedding in Connecticut, New York. It was a really, really beautiful, amazing wedding, which has generated more referrals from that wedding, which was a destination wedding, mind you, which then ended up leading us to a tour we're shooting of this big organization in Egypt for 12 days in next April. And so it's this little story of how now we're getting into this group of people who are, all these people have people that are, kids that are getting married. And so that referral process has started. So my point by all this is saying the referral process starts before the clients even get to us. They are so stoked because of what we've done for other vendors, which I owe a lot of testament to a book called Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi. When you market others, you market yourself at the same time. So when you can get others to market themselves by marketing you, that's a win-win situation. So that's one of the ways that we've been able to get people who already come in super stoked. And so we're less of selling them and more of just courting a relationship. And when you do that, every element, you know, we built in a $5,000 budget in 2007 to start taking our clients out to dinner after the photo shoots that we did. That was huge. I mean, that resulted in relationships. And so everything is founded on that.
Do you still see a lot of the similar referrals and lack of pushback on price in today's market as you did about anywhere from 3 to 5 years ago?
Okay, that question's a little complicated. As far as the pushback on price, I would say, and here's the cool thing about referral marketing, is you end up getting fewer people who are pricing you on commodity. And this is the thing that I can't stress enough, that I feel like I've been learning more and more every day, is when you get people that come in that talk about you, and it's easy to forget this because you don't hear what people are talking about you in the industry, especially if all you're doing is color correcting and fulfilling print orders. It's impossible to hear what the industry's saying unless you're out there and you're talking with them. So when you end up getting out there and you create these experiences with people and you court relationships with vendors and venues and you find ways to stoke them out, which takes time, which means you can't be doing all the production, you end up really stoking people out. And when you do that, you end up pre-qualifying the people that come to you. So in a sense, the leads that come to us are already pre-qualified, so we're not having to upsell them or force or try to sell them on a higher price. they just book because they're like, we have to have you guys because everyone's talked about you. And when that kind of clientele comes in, it's a big blessing to have someone come in that is knows they know, you know what, everyone's talked about you. And I think to quantify it in the best words is when you can plant in the people that are referring you, when you can plant in their mind that the clients that they recommend would be missing something if they didn't hire you, that desire, that kind of cultivating a rare referral that's based on your character, that you almost plant seeds of doubt with them if they go with anyone else because they've heard such a more quality, objective referral comment. They don't talk about, oh yeah, his pictures are great, you gotta hire him. They talk about the personality, who he is, how he deals with people, how they've dealt with him, telling a bride, man, you know what, because of his personality, I think he'd be the best fit for you. That gives people, brides, such security when they come in. It's not, we're kind of hoping this other photographer was this price. It's like, you know what, you're charging more, or whatever you're charging must be worth it. And because of that, we don't, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, it that justifies gouging anyone in particular, but people come in and everyone's been so stoked that they don't really balk at the price. Now, the one thing with this economy that does happen is people's budgets for, you know, upselling or, you know, for purchasing other things may go down a little bit, maybe 10 or 15%. But overall, the, you know, volume is there as far as...
It didn't stop anybody from getting married. It's just it may have affected their budget a little bit.
Right.
Right.
And when people know how much you care, it's like the old adage that says people don't know how, they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. When people really find out what the length that you go to establish a relationship, I found it kind of takes them off guard and they're like, really? I mean, we do some things that people are just like, wow, you guys do that for your clients? And we said, yeah, because I mean, you take care of your friends more than you take care of, better than you take care of strangers, partially because you know them and you want to. And the other part is because, you know, you just know how to better suit their needs because you've been around them longer and you kind of know them a little bit more. And it starts to make people wonder like, well, wait a second, if I go with someone who doesn't spend that much time with me, then they're not going to know to serve me as well. I don't tell them that, but they kind of get to that conclusion on their own. And they start to realize, they're like, wow, well, how much really is it worth saving for us? And you know, I believe that you don't miss what you don't know. And so if you don't tell them or you don't share with them in a positive way, never negative, it's never right to tell someone, well, I'm better than this photographer because they don't do this and they don't do that. That comes across cocky and lame. And, you know, it's just, it's not a good business habit to be in. And it's a balance between, you know, desperation and passion. You know, there's a lot of photographers now, a lot of businesses who are desperate for business, and making sure you come across passionate for them and not passion and not desperate for their check is something that I feel like, you know, photographers need to develop. They need to meet with 100 brides or 50 brides or a lot of brides to start to get that down and have a spouse or an assistant sit there with you to kind of give you feedback on, hey, did you sound desperate? How do you know? We talk about knowing what you don't know. Has most photographers have never had someone listen into a client conversation. They have never had someone critique them on how the experience that they provided was on the day of a wedding. I mean, I've seen some of the most amazing pictures in the world, but I've talked to brides later and said, yeah, he was just difficult to deal with. Pictures are great, but man, I don't know if I can recommend him because he just wasn't fun to work with, or he drained us. He wasn't, you know, intuitive or reverent to the wedding day. It was all about him and it was about his portfolio rather than our comfort level. Knowing these things are things that inhibit people from referring. And I tell all the photographers that come to our workshops, they say, you know, what, no one ever calls up and says, hey, you know, you did our wedding a year ago and we can't refer you because we just felt awkward at, you know, you weren't dressed as nice as we all were, and I felt like you chintzed out. It looked like you chintzed out on your clothes, or it looks like you just were more interested in your portfolio than us. And because of that, we can't refer you. I just thought you'd like to know. No one tells you that. So how are you going to know? How are you going to learn and continue to do things with excellence if your perception of excellence is misguided or clouded because of, you know, you just lack of knowing? You know, I've been there. I can't tell you how many things that, you know, you learn and you're just like humble. You're like, wow, I must have looked like a fool.
Oh, boy. Anyone who's been doing this for a while probably has some of those stories. I'm real sure of that.
Oh, yeah.
Now, how do you know how far to go with a particular client? I've worked with a bunch of different photographers on for wedding days, and everyone has their own personalities. And I've seen photographers who are pretty well standoffish, and they want the day to progress on its own without, you know, as little interference as possible. And then there's the opposite end of the spectrum, like, I don't know, David, and you know,
wow.
And he's very outgoing and very involved in what's going on and working with the people and not posing them constantly, but guiding them along the way and having this real tight relationship with them throughout the day. I've seen all the variations in between. Can you go too far, or is it just kind of based on the people?
You know, that's a good question. Two things. And this is kind of, you know, just to kind of define the terms and break things down. Your brand is, there's a difference in your brand and your identity. Your identity is the things that you create that distinguish who you are. Your brand is what's perceived in the public, what's perceived by your clientele. And I think it's important to understand, you know, Kevin Swan talks a lot about this with what he does. Is, and I've learned a lot from him, it's really important to pay attention to your perception. Your perception has a lot to do with your style. It's kind of like a lot of photographers, there was a lot of threads going around a year ago about how, what kind of band fits your music, your pictures, you know, what kind of style of music. You can look at some pictures and automatically the first thing comes to your mind, what kind of music would go to that? Or what do you think the photographer would look like back? Or you can look at somebody like, they look like a laid back kind of person. And I think it's important to understand the perception of you, and as you develop your character, this starts to come out as a really important thing to evaluate and develop. And character development and leadership is something that I'm really passionate about. You know, being a leader and watching five photographers that work with me on our team, watching them progress their personality as well as their image, you know, technicality and composition and everything is really interesting to watch, because I feel like I've learned a lot about how to even develop my relationship with clients even better. So to kind of, with that as a foundation, clients that are attracted to us by the style of the clients that refer us. So the longer you go with your referral clientele, the more you get clients who are like you. But when you start out, you kind of, I recommend to all the photographers who are starting out, get as many jobs as you can, get everyone, because you never know who you're going to get that's going to refer you to someone else. And it's so important in the early days to get as much volume as you can to get your business going. Regardless if it's clients you like or not, I think that to a certain degree, getting as many as you can to develop that experience, to get enough client meetings and all the experiences that you learn at a wedding under your belt. Because if you can compress that into 2 years, which is what I did, and I don't want to box everyone in and say that's the only way, but I feel like, you know, shooting that many weddings in the first couple of years, you know, I think I shot maybe close to 80 or 90 in the first 2 years, gave me, I started to watch myself develop and watch and having my assistants give me feedback on, hey, you know, you were a little bit bossy there. You were a little bit timid here. Looks like there's a little lack of leadership in getting things going. So then the vendors got frustrated with you because the food wasn't out on time. And so it's balancing. And I feel like as a photographer, you're balancing and managing the expectations of everyone on the day of a wedding, because ultimately you kind of, on the day of, you kind of control the schedule, aside from a wedding coordinator. And there's a lot of wedding coordinators that jump in and do this, which definitely assist in the leadership role of the day of a wedding. But solving social situations and solving technical difficulties and lighting difficulties and all how you solve these problems defines your competency as a leader, which ultimately defines how enjoyable you are to be around. Because if you're stressed worrying about all the things and the technical side of things and, oh, shoot, what do my settings need to be at now or whatever, you can't focus on the relationship side of things. So until you get those points mastered, the relationship side of thing can't progress and the experience is not consistent. And so then you do get people that are kind of all over the board. But once you get more experience and you get to the point as a photographer, you start to mature and you start to kind of grow, it becomes fun because then you start to have fun with yourself at a wedding because you're not worried about the technical side of things. You're not worried about, you know, all those things we just talked about. That's when your personality shines the most. And when people see a leader who is having fun, who is understands that they're the leader of the day, but also understands that a leader means you're a servant, and a leader, a cocky leader, is a bad servant. And an incompetent leader is very frustrating to be around. So you can be the nicest guy in the world, but if you don't know how to lead and you drag on the family portraits and everyone gets frustrated, they're going to say, hey, guy took great pictures, but took forever to get things done and the food was cold. And then the dad who's paying, for the wedding, people are going to ask him, how was your photography? They're like, I've had where the coordinator was telling me, he's like, whatever happens, the dad cannot get the food cold. And, this was obviously a Four Seasons wedding that was really kind of crazy, but that's kind of the long way around the question. But for the photographers that are just starting out saying, how do I develop myself and my experience? Really focusing on getting or develop the experience for the client and how to go, how do I know how's too far? I think developing yourself as a leader, having accountability, someone there, assistance that can bounce feedback off of you, having surveys that you can email brides afterwards and say, hey, how was it? Oftentimes, when you develop more of a relationship and you create time for that, they'll tell you. You can pick it up. And you grow with your intuition as a photographer, which I think is really important because, let's face it, unless you're selling yourself as a commodity, it's a very personable, relational industry.
I would definitely say that that describes me perfectly. When I started 3 years ago doing the weddings with David, that it seemed like if it was a 10-hour wedding, there was never enough time for anything. I mean, heaven forbid we saw a 6-hour wedding. There's a physical impossibility to get everything done in 6 hours. Now, 3 years into it, I can go and I'm like, I know the flow. I know what things typically go wrong. I know how to deal with the vendors really well. Now it seems like time. I got time. I have the time to relax and I enjoy it a lot more, and I think that comes out, and I can take the time to get the shots that I really want and to work with them a lot better, and things just go a lot smoother now that I really understand the flow, the technical side is down, all that. Now I'm really starting to feel that whole personality piece come out that I really didn't have before when I was getting started doing the weddings. And one thing that I've done, I've mentioned this on our show before, is when I first meet with a couple, I tell them that my whole goal for the day of the wedding is to make them so happy that they are compelled to give me a hug at the end of the day. And I have never failed to get that hug. And that's cool. To me, that's the relationship I'm trying to build with them. I want them so satisfied that they are compelled to give me a hug at the end of the day because they enjoyed working with me. They weren't stressed out. I made them feel comfortable. It had nothing to do with the images. It had nothing to do with pressing the shutter. It had everything to do with working with them and that relationship that I built with them. So I what you've been talking about really hits home with me because that's exactly how I think I've progressed over the last few years.
That's cool. Yeah, I think that's right on,
And I'm loving a lot of the keywords that you've been using this evening fairly consistently, and I'm seeing a common thread with them about what it is that we are to our clients and that we are a leader. We are servants. We build relationships. We need to have integrity, which seems to be something you really focus on because I think you've used it. I was keeping little tick marks. I'm like, right on. This guy is so dialed in.
You know what? I think when we do the intro to the show, we'll make that a drinking game.
Oh, cool. With Kool-Aid, of course. The words that you're using are super strong and super powerful. And in my opinion, they are key points about who we need to be very strong in. Or I don't... gosh, I'm kind of rambling on this, but it's hard to draw this out. Like, these are all points that we have to be strong in and leaders in, if that kind of wraps it up. Does that make sense, Mike?
Yeah, it does. It does. And you know, here's the cool thing that I think, as I've been, you know, this year I've gotten a chance to talk about this a lot, almost probably 30 times this year, which is a lot, but it's so helped me to develop this in my mind. And I think the key is that, and it's actually two things I want to share. The first thing is the consistency of the leadership in this day and age. And the second thing is how being a leader in your business it doesn't end there. Being a leader and seeking that as a person it transcends life. Because if you're a father, if you're a leader of an organization, if you're a CEO, you have to have these leadership traits. And ultimately, the biggest leader is the biggest servant. And if you think about it, if you say, okay, am I in the service related business? If that's what you are, I mean, we look at ourselves as an artist, right? We say, okay, cool, I'm an artist. I produce a product. Well, products default to commoditization in no time. And so we have to look at ourselves as a service-based artist that can be commoditized or commercialized. And in order for us to do that, we have to realize what's going to separate us from the masses is who we are. And so I can't stress enough, like, how important it is as a photographer, as a growing photographer. I mean, if you're in your first couple of years, you have a world open where you need to develop who you are as a person. And it's something that I feel that is being missed. And I feel like it's being missed by a lot of people, because there's this, and it's not, here's the thing. It's not something you can put in a software. You can't sell it. It's not easy. You have to teach it, and it has to come from the heart. And you have to watch a role model. People don't learn leadership through manuals. I mean, you can learn through books and experiences, and I've learned a lot through those. But you learn through stories, and you learn through seeing, you know, it in other people. And I feel like when an artist can become a leader, if there's elements that I would say that you need, to be a successful photographer, I would say this. The technical side, I think everyone can learn shutter stops and aperture and all that kind of stuff. But what people aren't going to go after is they're not going to push to excellence the level of their character development, because it's not fun. I mean, I'll be honest, like when I go to a wedding with my wife, and my wife shoots with me maybe 60 to 70% of the time, maybe 80. When we go to weddings, I can't tell you how often we have to put aside our personal preferences for unity. Because there's nothing worse than seeing another couple fight at a wedding who's on stage and everyone's watching them, and they're like, I told you to get the 50 millimeter lens. Well, I thought you meant the 85. No, the 50. And I missed the shot because of you. What? You missed the shot because you didn't tell me right. No, because can you imagine this dialogue at a wedding? Like, I won't have it. I tell my team, like, unity is so important, and it takes a leader to make that a priority. It's a leader to set up communication so that your assistants are several steps ahead of the main shooter. It takes a leader to be able to realize ahead of time, having intuition to say, you know what, there's going to be a problem because this father doesn't get along with the mother, and I need to figure out a way to make sure that both of them feel valued, but still have them in the shot for the most minimal amount of time. And I have to stoke out the coordinator because I can't be late, because I really want to work with this coordinator because she gets me weddings at the Four Seasons, and I love working with her because she's a great person to work with. So now I have to balance the time with the bride's, you know, list of 500 group family shots that she wants, which, you know, happens sometimes, but, you know, you have to make those things happen. And the photographer that can do that best, and also make the bride who hates herself in pictures like the pictures. So you have to manage all of these things at the same time, as well as lead your assistants and have fun at a wedding. And there's so much that goes on. If you're not being a leader to delegate tasks out, to foresee things in the future, and to be able to, you know, to manage yourself with integrity, people are going to get frustrated around you. People are going to be, you know, disappointed. And then you end up leaving a wedding subpar. And if you have, as a photographer, if you're new and getting into it, and you've never experienced working with a photographer who does He's an excellent leader, manages himself with integrity, and literally sets the bar for excellence of a wedding photographer on an international scale. That's something, when I see that, man, I get inspired so much. It's impossible to burn out. You start looking at 22 hours color correcting, you're like, nah, that's getting outsourced by far. I have a lot of work to do to grow and develop. I can't afford to be mediocre. I can't afford to live a lukewarm life. I can't afford to not be a leader in my business because I want to save some money on color corrections or save some money by having a cheaper company, you know, do it, or by not outsourcing. You can't do it. Otherwise, you're going to end up going in circles, being frustrated, and then you're going to end up losing all your money and wasting all this time that you spent on business when you chose to do things your way instead of doing things of excellence and managing yourself with integrity.
We have been kind of focusing on wedding photography. However, I think this applies to no matter what kind of client you're dealing with, whether it be corporate headshots or commercial, glamour, fashion, whatever, you have to have the same mentality going in that you are doing something for them. You are serving them. You're trying to make their experience good. You're trying to be a professional person and act a certain way. It's not just for wedding photographers. This goes across any type of business or any industry, I would say. So
wow.
Where'd the hat come from?
Yeah, the hat. I got a question after that too. I'm right behind you on something else.
It's weird I'd throw it out there.
Well, the hat, you know, the hat's a funny thing. I bought the first hat because my hair always used to blow at weddings because, you know, it's never windy when you shoot.
Yeah.
My hair would get in my face, and I just, you know, needed something to keep the threads down, if you know what I mean. So, but then I ended up getting gifts. I actually was helping Mike Colone shoot a wedding, and he develops relationships with his clients really well, too. So much so that they assumed that the people that he brought to assist him were not just hired help, but friends, too. And his bride actually bought me the second hat that I ever had, and that kind of started a trend of people getting hats as gifts. I mean, I got one from a wedding coordinator, gave one to me, my wife gave one to me, another client gave one to me, and so it's kind of started this thing where, and I did buy one in New York. I saw one, I was like, this is really cool, so I got it.
How big is your hat collection?
I think I have like six. I rotate them out. They start to get kind of, you know, because I travel so much, they get mauled in travel. I mean, all over the world, they just get destroyed. So if anyone out there has a way to carry hats that's not in the 1960s box, let me know, because I go through hats too fast.
I was going to talk about a unique technique that you have for getting group shots.
No, that's my question.
But I said it first.
You asked the hat. No. Okay, Mike, I would like to know how you came up with this unique technique for getting group shots, like the one you recently did at the Pictage headquarters, where there was like well over 100 people.
That's a good question. I'm the kind of guy, just to kind of preface this, I'm the kind of guy who, you get to the wedding location and the on-site person's like, you know, telling you, and this is where most photographers go, and they go to that tree over there. And the kind of person that would be like, okay, I'll look the other way, and be like, we're going to go over there. And they're like, you can't, no, dude, what, where? That's me. So because of that, I to be honest, like, I like to have just uniqueness. And so there was this one venue we were at. It was at a vineyard, and it was in October, and the vines were so big. I really wanted to get this really cool shot of the couple in the middle of the vineyard. And I was like, geez, it would be cool if I had a 30-foot, you know, A-frame ladder. I didn't have it. So, and this is in 2007, I believe, October 07. And so at that point, I'm like, well, what if I just throw my camera in the air and like maybe time it and get it? You know, I'm the kind of person, the guy that growing up that was always doing funky things, you know, that people said I couldn't do, especially my wife, who was like, Mike, I don't think you should do that. I'm like, okay, they tilled the ground, it's soft, you know, and it's mellow. So I did it, and I tried it maybe like 12 times, and I was just, I got one shot that kind of randomly came out. I was like, well, that's kind of cool. After trying it a couple more times, I realized it was more consistent if I was in the center. And then I shot it going, throwing out, spinning the camera, which is the trick to it. So that's how I got it, and I refined it over time where I can just throw it up on a 2-second timer, or I put a little intervalometer on the bottom and I just drag the shutter, and I can do that too. So really it can go either way, but it's something that's really fun. And you know, the thing that I've learned the most about it is people like it because they feel like I'm doing it passionately. They're like, you really care about being here. It's the comments that I hear after. And I think, yeah, of course I do. But they're like, most photographers, and they'll say, like, most photographers don't do that.
I'm like, well, do what?
And they say, well, they just do what they normally do. And they tell me, they're like, you just do something different because you enjoy it and you really look like you're having fun. And I said, you know, and I started to learn. I'm like, you know, most of what I've learned to tell my clients, my future brides, are actually what other brides have told me and other clients have told me. And that was just one thing where I was just kind of like, wow. So, you know, I had one bride that got bummed that I didn't do it. She's like, the bride's in the kitchen to me. And she's like, Mike, the bride's really bummed you haven't done it yet. And I said, really? I asked her why. And she's like, well, she feels like that means to her that you care. And I said, I was sitting here blown away. I'm like, wow. And so it was too dark out, but we did it anyway. And the bride gave me this hug. And she's like, I was so stoked that everyone saw that my photographer did something that no one else has done at a wedding. And it made me think, I'm like, you know what? Like, she was proud that she had a photographer that cared. And that meant the world to her. And that was one of the reasons why she hired me. And she invested a lot in her photographer. And from then on, I've realized that, you know what? People care almost more about their experience of how the wedding, how the pictures are going to come out on that day. And it's like when you buy an iPhone, you're proud of it. You show it off. Well, I never realized that people would be proud of their photographer, like proud, where the point, like, you got to see what my photographer is going to do. And that blew my mind because I'm like, wow, how, that's just not something that happens in most industries, you know? People aren't like, man, you have to see the guy that repairs my vacuum cleaner. He is so cool. You got to meet him. Like, no one, people don't talk that way about service related people. You know, they may talk about it as an artist. Oh, you got to go check out his gallery. But when they talk about you, wait till he gets here. You just got to see what it's like to have him there. When people are talking like that, I mean, that's the most powerful referral you can get. And you can't get that again. You can't get to that point if you're spending all your time trying to be an artist and you're getting dragged down and you have this anchor of inefficient business behind business practices, or you're not developing fast enough because you haven't set yourself up to be, you know, to grow as fast as you can. You can't. Like Dane Sanders says, the fast track. Well, there's things that you can do, and there's so many things that you can do to get in the fast track, and I see most photographers not doing those because they get stuck in fear, and they run their business based on fear, unfortunately. And I can say this because I've been there, and it breaks my heart to see photographers there, because let's be honest, like, if you operate your business in fear, you're going to get run over by the next guy and the next guy. And then you start looking at things from a, oh my gosh, how do I save money? And oh my gosh, how do I just curl into a corner and like have the least amount of impact as possible? But when you think about it, the best entrepreneurs, there's risk involved, which everyone goes into owning a business, but a lot of people like to put themselves into a safe category. And if you're being safe, you're not trying different things, you're not experimenting, there's no risk, and there's a little potential for growth. And when I risked, you know, sending my images out to be processed by like photographer's edit or whatever, I was risking sending, you know, another expense. But I looked at it and said, wow, if I can save that money and take a 10%, 5% overall pay cut for the year, free myself with 1,000 hours that I can now spend not on color correcting, can I make back that 5% or that $5,000 or $10,000 I spent in color correction? Can I spend 500 hours making $10,000 back? Heck yeah, I can. Tenfold. And that's what I believe is the mind frame that, you know, photographers or businessmen need to be in, because you could spend half that time doing creative shoots and becoming more of an artist, and the other half networking and growing your business and growing other people's businesses and finding out ways to serve them, being a leader in their industry, serving, aka serving other vendors, and grow your business. And next thing you know, it's like, geez, what was a $5,000 or $10,000 pay cut now turns into like a $50,000 gain because you have more business and you're stoking more people out, and now you're known as someone who's more efficient with their time. And that's where things get fun.
Some great points there.
Very solid points. I'm going to have to agree with you, Gary. It's a lot of meat and potatoes that we're covering here tonight.
And bacon.
Bacon. Okay.
Now you're not going to recommend that everybody go out and practice throwing their camera 30 feet in the air, are you?
No. If you want to practice it, I'd recommend doing it over like grass or a mattress or something like that.
Have you dropped it? Have you like been
you
like,
know, I get that question asked a lot. I haven't dropped it. I still sometimes get a little nervous. I don't know if you saw that shot I did last week. Maybe it was actually 2 weeks ago now in Oahu over the water. That was kind of,
yes,
kind of hairy.
Yeah, that was gorgeous. The water, you said it was about a foot deep or so. That was gorgeous.
Yeah, it was, that was a little bit nervous, but I mean, you know, it's like, to be honest, I mean, I haven't dropped it, but I mean, it's funny because I've dropped a lens before accidentally. Ooh. And it was kind of like going into my bag, but I've never dropped a camera throwing it.
Has your insurance rep ever seen what you do?
No.
Okay. Let's just get to the important points there, right?
But if and we're all familiar with the risk and fraud department with the odds, at least those of us who, you know, been in business long enough to know, you know, banking odds. If they were to ask how long I've been doing it and calculating how many times I've done it, the odds are pretty good. But, you know, I'll be honest, there's times where I pray that I would get the shot fast and that I wouldn't have to throw it up many times and it would be safe. So,
and this is why when you were at Pictage doing it on asphalt, you used somebody else's camera.
Yeah, I used the CEO of Pictage, so I was.
I'm sure he didn't mind.
It was a lifeline. Well, it was. To be honest, and I don't know if this will get around, but I guess it's the truth, so it's okay if I say it. The lens was a rental from Sammy's, and so was the little trigger, and I borrowed a camera battery and bottom grip from one of the photographers there. So it was like piecemealed together from a bunch of different people.
Sweet.
Because you need that balance with the battery grip.
Yeah, the balance definitely helps.
Yeah.
It's certainly an interesting technique. The shot is really cool.
Thanks.
I mean, I was impressed when we saw it. Gosh, what was the first time we saw pictures of it? 2 years ago?
Yeah.
It's definitely different. And, you know, I'm okay. Yeah, sure. I'll put my camera on the ground with a fisheye and shoot up with everyone around a circle. You know, I don't quite have the cojones to be tossing my gear up in the air like that yet. David thought about trying it once, and I was like, yeah, I don't know, dude.
Yeah, you and Catherine were like, no, breaks.
But it's something that sets you apart. And I think a recurring theme for anyone who's been listening to the show for the last year, I mean, this will be episode 58, the recurring theme that you keep bringing up that we've talked about time and time again is you are not your photography. You are selling yourself. You're not necessarily, the end result is that the customer gets some images, but the sales process, the experience is all about selling yourself and not so much about the actual images, which is a very different way of looking at things than a lot of people who get into photography think that it's going to turn out.
And not only that, but it's also not an A to B, an A to Z path either. That's something that I just read this afternoon, where photography is very similar to just kind of like a windy, twisty road. There's going to be different turns coming up around that you're not going to see, that you're going to need to go down to get from point A to point B and further down the path. I think, yeah, it was John Miralles that had mentioned that in his email this afternoon. I thought that was pretty inspiring.
Yeah, that's cool. I like that.
Wow, I've got a page and a half of notes here. This is awesome.
Well, Mike, we're at an hour, which is a we always seem to go long. Everyone tells us you can't do an hour long podcast, and we seem to do it every week for some reason.
You guys are good.
We definitely want to thank you for your time and being on. I think this was another fantastic show that is going to touch a lot of people and help them to really see how they can maybe change themselves to be more effective with their clients and to deal with their clients a little better. So I really thank you for your time and thank you for being on.
Thank you. It was an honor being on the show.
No, this has been great. Thank you very much.
There was one story that I forgot to share that I wanted to add.
Well, throw it out there.
Last minute outro. I know that a lot of people, something I want to leave with something practical. So I'll keep this short because I know we're at the hour. So we last year we wasted quite a few, at least four, maybe not five figures on our post-production album processes, orders and everything. And one of the things that we really were amped on was working and just changing our mind frame. And this is a practical example of it. We ended up hooking up with Kiss Wedding Books. Have you guys used them at all?
Yeah.
And Kevin, their whole simple ordering process, taking 45 seconds, changed. We used to use a couple of companies where we have to send in. It was at least a week and a half to order, and it was at least 4 points of contact. And we calculated up the metrics of how much time that costed, our waste of time, like Dane talks about, talking, like figuring out how much time, but then, it takes to do tasks. But then saying, if you have waste and it costs us like 5 hours per client and you times that by 60 clients or however many clients, if you have a couple of clients and you're a photographer and you're like, this is cool, I only have so many clients and things are going good, and you have some waste and you don't realize what that waste is, again, like we were talking earlier, you don't know what you don't know. If you're not aware of it, we ended up multiplying that times so many clients across the board from previous years and that year that we ended up wasting a lot of money. And by changing, by working with companies and by changing the way we did things, by utilizing systems that are not necessarily reinventing the wheel, but just keeping things simple, we were able to save a lot of money, turn around a lot of our products a lot quicker, stoke out a lot more clients, and have more time to be free to even grow your business, listen to podcasts, go to workshops, develop relationships with clients, all these things that are so important to do. That should be a something that every photographer is hungry for. And for the photographers that are listening to this podcast, seeing here, okay, where do I go from here? I would highly recommend that from here you set a list of non-negotiables and put it like a weekday. Set up action items. If you're listening to here and you're like, you know what, I was inspired and I came up with like these things I'm going to do. Set a date and have accountability and say, I need someone to hold me accountable, and then do it. And if it was a character trait thing you were inspired, write, character trait. If it was a theory, write those things down, but especially for character traits and action items, give yourself a deadline to do it, to complete it, and to implement that into a successful role into your business. The only way you're going to grow is if you're hungry to grow and implement the things that you did. And too many people get inspired and then forget. And honestly, forgetting to have that fire to just change and to grow will make your business grow slower, and it'll take longer to get there, and it'll take longer to be profitable. And there are people that are doing it faster and better. You have to keep up, and it's not something to be overwhelmed by. It's something every single person can totally do. But I think you have to realize that it's ultimately the success of your business really hinges on your ability to be a leader and to implement the things that you've learned, to serve other people, and to be well-rounded as not only an artist, but knowing enough business to outsource which you don't want to do so that you can enjoy being the artist that you want to be.
Well put. Very well put.
I'm going to quote Keanu Reeves right here, and I'm just going to say, whoa.
That's an excellent way of closing this, and that's certainly something that everyone can go and do and should go and do, and put those goals in front of you, put dates on them, and start making things happen for yourself.
And not only that, but I think if any of the listeners want, if they want to be held accountable or have some help being held accountable, put those in the forums. And let's revisit this maybe in like 30 days or something and see where people stand. I'd really be curious to hear what some actionable items are that people want to make changes on in their business, their character, their craft, whatever it might be.
Yeah, you make a good point. The forums are a great place because, I have people that critique my blog. Someone made a comment that, I love to spearfish, and I made a comment on my blog about something being like killing fish being a manly thing to do. And someone said, hey, as a bride, I thought that was a little bit, kind of could have been taken the wrong way. And she said, I don't want you to be perceived that way. And I have people that are like my feelers that kind of evaluate things for me.
I have to do that to David all the time.
Shut up.
I can tell stories.
I'm glad you're doing that because it was a bunch of things I was going to say. And now that I'm doing that,
Oh,
Mike,
I'm just kidding.
Do you have any workshops or seminars that you're doing coming up?
You know, we just finished a week-long intensive in Hawaii that was so fun. It was this all-inclusive expenses paid. Really cool. We rented a house. We may have another one coming up in October. We do have one in Amsterdam in Germany in November. Obviously, PartnerCon is going to be going off. We have the KISS guys, Kevin, Sean, and Nathan, and I are doing something for PartnerCon. But we do have a couple small ones coming up in San Luis and in Vegas, which will be on the site, on our site, just michaelarson.com/seminars. So.
Okay, we'll make sure we have a link to that in the show notes so people can find you. And you usually talk at WPPI.
Yeah, there and the conferences. And so, you know, if anyone has any questions from here, you know, feel free to shoot me an email. Just email me seminars@mikelarson.com. I just love to help people out because so many people contact me and they're like, Mike, I'm trying to support a family and this business isn't going and I gotta make the bills and you meet. And so if there's anything I could do to help, you know, if it's an easy little thing, awesome. You know, if you got a laundry list of questions, you know, that send what you can. I'll answer what I can. If not, you know, cruise out to one of the workshops or one of the partner cons or whatever. There's awesome people, awesome information there. And hopefully between, you know, this, you know, podcast, which I think is awesome. I mean, you're getting fueled. You're hungry for the information. I think this is a great place to get it. Thank you guys for having me on the show. It was an honor to be here.
Well, thank you again. Well, that was certainly a lot of different topics, from customer relations to business things to dealing with associates and just about everything in between. But I think Mike covered just a wealth of information for just about anybody, regardless of whether you're a wedding photographer or portraits or grad nights or whatever it is that you do. Maybe landscape doesn't quite work if you can't build a relationship with a mountain. But overall, I mean, if you're dealing with people in any type of service organization, I think Mike really has some really valid points that are going to help most anyone out there who's trying to do a photography business.
And I love how he focused on, excuse me, a lot of things like being a good leader, because if you're a good leader, you're an excellent servant. You're serving your client. He's talking about integrity, the relationships that you should be building with your clients, building your character. He talked about brand. He talked about identity. And excuse me. He defined those as well, which I thought was really unique, because people constantly in the biz refer to it as like, you've got to have your brand identity down. It's like they're two totally separate things, completely separate things. I always thought they were. That's what I'd been told, and hearing it from somebody else, it's like, yeah, okay, I understood it correctly. So, wow. I mean, I've got a page and a half of notes here. I feel really blessed to have been able to sit down and chat with him today. This has been great.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Well, this has been a long show. We apologize for people who don't like our long shows, but this has been fairly long. And let's go ahead and wrap it up. David, throw out your 411 for us.
Dude, you can totally find me at EsquirePhotography.com, Facebook.com/EsquirePhotography, and Twitter.com/EsquirePhoto. Would have been Esquire Photography, but they only give you so many letters.
Can you do?
I know. Kind of blows, man. You can also find me on the forums. I'm chiming in quite a bit more and doing my best to partake in the forums. So definitely keep those happening. Keep the questions rolling for me.
The forums have been very active lately.
Dude, they've been in fuego. And you know what? I just want to take a shout out to, I'm totally drawing a blank right now. Ben, dude, you're rocking it in the forums right now. Seriously, you are taking the reins and being a leader in the forums. And I just want to say thank you. We need more people that are able to just kind of throw caution to the wind and just grab the bull by the horns and run with it. And I just want to say thank you. You're really being a leader in the forums right now. I really appreciate it.
I really like how people have been really free to just say what they want to say and be open to discussion. And there's no hasn't been any flaming going back and forth. There's been some really good discussions going on, and that's what really what I wanted to see in there. And it's really happening right now.
It is. It truly is. And I love the fact, you know, no grumpies. Please leave it at the doorstep. We all have our moments, but you know, this is definitely the place for open discussion and solid critiques and honesty and not being cruel, things like that. Also, since we're on the topic, if anybody was offended, or if I should use the term from an 80s movie, does Ow offend from Ducky? You know, hey, I was misinformed apparently on a lot of information, but at the same time, a lot of the information I was being fed was to be true and accurate about how you can shoot in the UK, as I had was also told when I was over in the UK last year. But I love the fact that Phil Price, the day that last week's episode dropped, shot over an article that went live the same day on the British Journal of Photography, on the BJP, and clarifying and a lot of the misconceptions and a lot of the mistruths that are going on about shooting in the UK. So for all those that are out there that are either Anglophiles like me with British heritage and or living in the UK or abroad over there, do apologize. Appreciate it if you could forgive me, and we'll definitely continue to do our best to make sure we have all of our facts straight and accurate.
Well, as we've proven in recent shows, we are only human.
Yeah, we're on a roll, so that's 2 out of 3 things happen in threes.
But yeah, we don't take corrections like that personally. If we make a mistake, point it out. We do make mistakes, and you know, we have no problem admitting it when we do, especially when someone catches us in one. So.
And Kerry, where can we find you? Let's bring this to a close, bro.
Okay. You can always find me at kerrygarrison.com, in the forums at cameradojo.com. You can follow the show on twitter.com/cameradojo or facebook.com/cameradojo. And I post all the new articles to both of those. And on Twitter, quite often, I'll find some other photography related links that I'll put out there for other people to enjoy. And again, if you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Kerry Garrison or facebook.com/Kerry Garrison, all the stuff, all these links, a lot of the stuff that we talked about during the show, all in the show notes on cameradojo.com. So check it out. Just one click away. You don't have to try and remember any of this. So let's wrap it up. It's been a great show. And everyone out there, we'll catch you next week.
Hey, this is Mike Larson. You're listening to Damra Code. Man, I thought I was going to get that perfect, and I was going to beat Dane. I can't settle for tying with Dane. All right, let's try it again.
Welcome to Camera Dojo, the official podcast of Camera... Oh, fudge nut.